You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Shooting chance! Oh, Thorgan Hazard! What a thunderous goal for Belgium!
Holles again to tee it up for Patrick Schick to send the Czech Republic into the quarterfinal.
The last 16 at Euro 2020 is delivering, Chris.
Yes, it is. The holders, Portugal, are out. Schick shocks the Dutch. We'll hear from Frank de Boer on that.
Some amazing results, but we also have these teams to look forward to on Monday.
It's Benzema who makes it 1-1.
Cheddar Shaqiri curls in an absolute beauty.
Pau Torres, 5 for Spain.
Kovacic for Modric. It is a stunning moment.
We'll hear from Hugo Lloris and Granit Xhaka as the round of 16 continues.
Welcome to the show presented by Qatar Airways. I'm Rob Daly and I'm joined by my regular co-host Chris Parrott. Chris, hello.
Hello, Rob.
And also with us is commentator Jackie Oatley. Jackie, thanks for coming on.
Great to be back with you.
Chris, for as much as we sort of build up and analyse the squads and look at the tactics and everything, suddenly the Dutch and Portugal are gone. Ronaldo is gone. Memphis Depay gone.
It's knockout
football.
Yeah, it's brutal for the losers. It's joyous for the winners. And it just goes to show, right, it's not how you start a tournament, it's how you finish it. And yeah, I mean, the Netherlands, well beaten in the end, having been the group stage top goal scorers by the Czech Republic. And you mentioned all the tactics and all the analytics. Well, Portugal finished
with... Who's going to be third choice goalkeeper and all these things we slog
Portugal
over.
Portugal finished with 38-year-old Pepe up front as they look for an equaliser to take it to extra time, but they didn't have enough. And it's Belgium who march on after a very, very good performance for them.
1-0 win for Belgium. And earlier in the day, of course, the Czech Republic beating the Netherlands. Jackie, what a goal from Thorgan Hazard to win that game between two of the best teams at the tournament.
Oh, fabulous. It should be Thorgan Swazard, shouldn't it? With the way that he cut across the face of that ball and into the far post with poor Rui Patricio wrong-footed. He'd just taken a step to his right, hadn't he, at that moment. But it was a fantastic goal to win it, absolutely. And a lot of people might have thought that his brother might have been the one to score a goal like that, but full credit to him, emerging from his shadows at last.
And it was lovely to see the pair actually celebrate, wasn't it, as well, together after he smacked that one. Okay, more on that very shortly. A reminder, we want your thoughts on who are the three best midfielders, lots of candidates at Euro 2020 so far. Hashtag Euroshow if you want to get in touch. Kez has gone for Pogba, De Bruyne and Calvin Phillips. Keep your suggestions coming in. We'll get to more of those shortly. Hashtag Euroshow on Twitter. But let's get into the action in Seville then. And it was Belgium's night against the holders, Portugal.
Ronaldo! What a tricky one. Paulinho with the header back. It was swerving all over the place. Shooting chance! Oh, my goodness me! Thorgan Hazard! What a thunderous goal for Belgium! At half-time at the Estadio La Cartuja, it's Belgium 1, Portugal 0. Bruno Fernandes, brilliant! Oh, and off the line by Courtois! Hit on the volley off the foot of the post this time! Well, Portugal, they could not have come closer. Maybe Belgium's time is now! They've knocked out the defending champions.
What a win for Belgium. They started with a three-man attack of De Bruyne, Lukaku and Eden Hazard. Two of them went off injured and we will get to that shortly. Lukaku surviving the full encounter. Jackie, did Belgium deserve the victory on the night?
Well, they did on the basis that they defended well when they had to, and Portugal, frankly, just didn't do enough. Portugal had their chances. That late one for João Félix. If one goal is going to win it, you want it to be a quality one like that. And it was a fantastic finish. And people have looked at Belgium and looked at the attacking players they've got, the phenomenal midfielders, the likes of De Bruyne, of course, who very sadly went off injured. Hopefully it's not as serious as it looked. And but the question has always been about the defence. Is it quite strong enough to win their first major tournament? And they did enough on this occasion.
Yeah, definitely a few answers to that key question, I think. And it wasn't just the back three, which I think had a combined age of 101, by the way. It was the whole Belgium outfit. From the front with Lukaku and De Bruyne and Hazard, they were very, very well drilled. We know about their wonderful attacking qualities. I think in Seville we saw what a team they are as well and how well drilled under Roberto Martinez they are too. And, you know, it was an interesting game up until about the 75-minute mark. It was quite tight and cagey and then it just went a bit balmy for the last 15 minutes. We heard in your commentary there the amount of opportunities there were in the last 15 minutes, particularly from Portugal's point of view, to take it to extra time. But I think over the 90 minutes, Belgium were the better team. And the one hope they will have is at the end, I did spot Hazard and De Bruyne celebrating on the pitch with their teammates. They both went off, and Belgium supporters will be desperately hoping they're OK for the quarterfinals. The fact that they didn't go down the tunnel for treatment, we won't know, we might not know for 24, 48 hours, but the fact they were on the pitch at the end may be a good sign.
De Bruyne went over on his ankle, didn't he, after a challenge in the second half. Portugal, by the way, well, they handed a first ever international start to Diogo Dalot at right back due to injury to Nelson Semedo. We saw João Paulinho come into the side as well in central midfield. They had an early chance of Diogo Jota. Ronaldo free kick saved. But then there was that goal just before half-time. It did seem cagey, didn't it, Jackie? These were two teams. I mean, they knew each other's strengths. I think we're all expecting a big open attacking game, but they were both very cautious in the way they went about much of the encounter.
How often do we do this, though? How often do we pinpoint a match? Particularly,
I feel responsible, actually, in a way. Because I was so excited for this one, you know, and I thought it was going to be loads of goals, but it was just so intriguing to watch the two teams set up the way they did.
We were all looking forward to it immensely. And in some ways, it didn't disappoint because there were so many different elements to the game, but not in terms of it being end-to-end loads of goals, no. But it was still fascinating to watch. And I thought it was interesting to see that the goal did once again come from that Portugal's right-hand side. And being a sad geek that I am, which is probably why I'm here, because I'm not actually it's either that or, you know, having a social life, being in the pub and just chatting and being an interesting person. But no, 6 out of Portugal's 7 goals conceded in this tournament have involved issues on their right-hand side. So 4 goals against Germany, plus one that was disallowed early on for offside. Semedo had a torrid time in that game as well, and his positioning issues all round, plus the penalty conceded against France by Semedo. It was only Benzema's 2nd goal for France that came from the other side of the pitch. So that's something that they'll look at in due course, but not tonight. But it's just a case of getting the job done for Belgium. But it's a shame it didn't really ignite in the way that we wanted it to, but it did late on. It sort of ebbed and flowed, didn't it?
I can't remember too many instances, though, Rob, of teams winning Euro or any major football competition actually by being all out attack, and we'll get onto it later. But the Netherlands have been brilliant going forward, but they're out. And I think Roberto Martinez knows in that squad and in that 11 that he picked in Seville that, of course, they can score goals. But also, now they've proved against, you know, some of the best attacking players in the world that they can also keep another clean sheet.
João Felix, everybody, and Bruno Fernandes, and
but you know, they were resolute, they were very well drilled and hard to beat. And I think a lot of people in Europe watching and listening to that game are suddenly going to think, well, Belgium have got everything if they can defend that well and keep clean sheets as well as scoring the goals that they did against Denmark, for example, in the group stage. Then maybe they really are the favourites to go all the way.
There were some nervy moments at the end. That brilliant Ruben Dias header. Blocked on the line. We saw Rafael Guerreiro hit one with his right foot.
That was very unlucky.
Yeah, onto the base of the post, and you thought maybe they could get it to extra time. So what do we reckon to Belgium's prospects then, Chris, of maybe going all the way?
I mean, why not? Let's be honest. I mean, we know they have the pedigree.
Is Hazard and De Bruyne's fitness key to that?
Well, yes. I mean, they are two of the best players in the world, and Eden Hazard starting again as captain, of course, plays with a huge smile on his face. I think the fact that his brother's playing alongside him, we know how close they are throughout their careers. He'll be delighted for Torgan that he scored the winner. The one issue for Belgium might be this half of the draw, because you beat Portugal. Incredibly tough to get Portugal having won your section.
Yeah.
Quarterfinal, Italy. So, I mean, if Belgium are going to go all the way, they really will do it the hard way. But Roberto Martinez and his team, I think, will give themselves probably 24, 48 hours to get over this match. It was not for the faint-hearted at times. There'll be a few bumps and bruises. It was played in searing heat, but they got the job done. They've knocked out the holders, and now this group of players, if they didn't believe before, which I think they did actually, but they're definitely going to be after beating a very, very good Portugal team.
The expectation levels on them as well. I mean, they've been number one in the world for, what, 1,000 days, but they haven't won anything. They've never won anything. And they don't want to be that so-called golden generation who don't win anything. You look at Lukaku, he didn't score on this occasion, but it doesn't matter. You know what he's done in the tournament so far and how much of a better player he is, by the way. The way he's improved his game and added so much more since leaving England. And you just think, if they can just continue to keep it tight at the back and to keep clean sheets, at the risk of stating the obvious, they have so much other attacking talent, both in midfield and up front, that they will be one of the favourites. But then they're up against Italy next, who everyone was sort of tipping after the group stage. And I'm not sure we could really place too much emphasis on the group stage and what we learnt from there, because knockout football is so, so different to group stage football, which is why it's going to be so fascinating to see how England do against Germany. They've been criticised for 7 points out 9 and 3 clean sheets, but let's see what they could do in the knockout stages.
And you know, as well, we heard from Elisa Saliu on last night's programme, Rob, about talking about the Belgium pessimism, that she said, you know, most Belgians are pessimistic when it comes to sporting sides or individuals. I just wonder what they are thinking now, having seen that performance. That, given that they were probably terrified for the last 10 minutes of the game, but having having got beyond Portugal now, surely they're going to start believing.
So Belgium get the victory and they will take on Italy in a quarter-final in Munich. What a day it was on Sunday. In the first knockout match, by the way, the Czech Republic shocked the Netherlands.
It's Marlon going to try and go on his own. Daniel Marlon and Vatsleek with a glorious save at his feet. De Ligt is off. Red card for De Ligt. This time for Barak. Kalas wins it! Holles with the goal that sends the Czech fans wild! One of their great moments! Wijnaldum dispossessed. Holles again to tee it up for Patrick Schick to send the Czech Republic into the quarterfinal! And the Dutch wilt under pressure at a Euro. Again, it is the Czechs who head to Baku to face the Danes.
What a result for the Czech Republic. Well, Ondře Zlamal is our reporter. He was at the Puskas Arena and he joined us now. Ondře, what a game.
Hello, nice to hear you. And it's fantastic. I still can't believe perfectly what I have just seen, what a team performance and how the fans enjoyed being again reunited with the Czech players and how it all worked. You know, fantastic night. We will remember this for a long time.
Ondře, we had you on the show yesterday and we were speaking about great Czech performances at Euro. Where does this rank? By the sounds of your voice, pretty high.
Yes. It's comparable to the success in 2004 because the teamwork, which we defeated a very strong team, and I saw how good all the Dutch players were when they got the ball, but there were always two Czech players helping each other to stop the attacks, to stop the build-up, to eliminate the danger, and they simply didn't allow the Dutch to play their game, and the Czech prevailed because of the teamwork, and it's fantastic. You know, it's I love football because of this. This is not about stars, about the big names. This is about the teamwork, and the Czech must be proud today, and the coach was proud. Tomáš Souček was really proud. I've seen wonderful game today.
And just talk to us about those scenes at the end. You were inside the stadium when the Czech Republic players went over to those supporters and had their moment together. That must have been very, very special to witness.
It was after 2 years they didn't have such a support, and they spoke about it. I told you, they don't remember when they played in front of the crowds.
Yeah.
Tomáš Souček went out, everything was ready, the flesh is done. I spoke also to Tomáš Souček, he was really proud. Then he came back and he went to the stand where the fans were waiting for them and took pictures with them. And Antonín Barák, he just went back to find somebody and gave him his shirt from the game and took pictures with the other fans. It was a marvelous night. The football with the fans is totally different thing than without. And I believe that Budapest is is full of really proud fans of the Czech team. And I also asked, there was a wonderful thing I want to share with you. When the Czech players were going the round and they were applauded by the Czech fans, they reached the sector with the Dutch fan. And I saw that the reaction would be like negative, but the Dutch fans, they applauded.
Oh,
and
wow. Really?
They joined the, they applauded to them. They hand clapped, and it is really, really thrilling feeling where you are standing there and you see the opponent's fans appreciate your effort you put into the game. And I asked the coach what he thinks about that. He said it's a great honor when such fans like the Dutch guys are capable to appreciate your performance. It's a great reward for what you have put into the game. I asked him, you know, in the press conference, and the coach was really happy to see that. He noticed that the Dutch fans were like that.
Andre, you and the Czech Republic march on. Thank you very much for joining us on the show.
You didn't expect that when you invited me for the first time.
Thanks.
You can't get rid of me now. Just
We love having you on. Thanks, Andre.
Good night.
UEFA's Andre Slamal, he is loving it, isn't he?
He is.
Czech national team.
Who can blame him?
I know. It feels like there's a real good spirit in that group. Mm. And Jackie Oatley now, we've got a position where the Czech Republic take on Denmark. And one of those teams, they meet in Baku, the quarterfinals, and one of those teams will be in the semis.
Yes, but this is what it's all about, isn't it? These major tournaments are not about looking at the top-ranked sides in the world and saying, yep, they'll make the last eight, they'll make the last four. Yes, we tend to pick one of the very favourites to win it, whether it's France or Belgium, perhaps. But this is all about the stories, isn't it? And how many stories have we had in the Euros over the years? Fabulous story of Denmark, of course, Czech Republic as well, what they've done in the past. But neither really expected to do a great deal on this occasion, especially Denmark after losing the opening couple of games. And so it will be fascinating. Then they, in the semi-final, one of them would play the winner of the Sweden-Ukraine or England-Germany match.
Yeah, very interesting how the draw is panning out. Well, let's get the Dutch perspective now and hear from the Netherlands head coach Frank de Boer, who spoke to us after the match.
Well, I think maybe we started a little bit, not sloppy, but we had a little bit problems with the pressure, especially on our right side. But I think after 5 minutes, 6 minutes, we took the control over. And yeah, I had the feeling that yeah, it was a tough match because they are tough opponents. And then, of course, the one against one with Daniel against the goalkeeper. A great save, of course. And 30 seconds later, I think it's the whole world is upside down for us, you know. So yeah, I think that is a little bit the story of this game. Yeah, of course, it's a very big setup, of course, for us, you know, that we are not going to our next phase, next round in Baku. I have to congratulate the Czechs, of course. Great achievement, and I wish them all the luck for the rest of the tournament. Very disappointed result for us.
Well, after winning all three group games, there were such great expectations on the Urania to potentially go deep into the competition. And while Denzel Dumfries did cause them problems, like they were struggling to deal with him again at right wing back, they managed to keep the Dutch at bay. And then, and Jackie was talking about it before, Chris, tournament football, it's all moments. And we heard Frank de Boer mention it there. 30 seconds of madness where really the game got thrown up.
Yeah.
Into the air.
So Memphis and Daniel Marlon again combining fantastically. Daniel Marlon suddenly sprints through a challenge and is one on one, and you think this is a goal. This is the Dutch 1-0 up. They had probably 20,000-30,000 in the stands. You thought,
brilliant run from Marlon.
Brilliant
as well,
run from Marlon. Yeah. He tried to go round the goalkeeper, made a really really good save, and then literally within 30 seconds at the other end, Matthijs de Ligt slipped, and then I think very instinctively put out his hand and touched the ball. And Patrick Schick would have been in on goal. Initially, a yellow card was given, a long VAR check, and the correct outcome really was
there. Yeah, there was no doubt. There was nothing between Schick and goal.
Exactly. And one of those that, in the moment, very difficult to see whether he was absolutely the last man. After all the replays, he was. So De Ligt gets sent off. So instead of the Dutch being 1-0 up, they're a man down in the space of, well, as I said, 30 seconds. And then from that point on, massive credit to the Czech Republic, because boy did they take their opportunity. I think the Dutch will look back and see how did we react to that red card, and there was probably a 10-15 minute period when they looked a little bit manic, but the Czech Republic, full credit, they seized their opportunity really. They scored two goals and they thoroughly deserved to make it through to the quarterfinals yet again.
Yeah, they seized the opportunity, didn't they, after the Dutch went down to 10 men. Well, Flo Lloyd-Hughes has been at the UEFA Football Village in London for us, and she's been speaking to some disappointed Dutch fans.
So we're here with Tara and Danielle in the Football Village. The final whistle has just gone. How are you feeling, guys?
Gutted.
Pretty set.
Yeah, that hurt.
Yeah,
that hurt. The red card was the final straw.
Yeah, we're devastated. I know going into this tournament, a lot of people's expectations weren't that high because it's been a tough few years, coach changes and things like that. But obviously today, you felt like actually you had a pretty good chance, right, to get through to the next round.
We were pretty sure they would go to the next round, yeah.
All my friends were dressed in orange, convinced, because I was so convinced.
Flo's question was absolutely spot on there, wasn't it? You came in with little expectation, then everything changed, and you could hear that they didn't even think about not winning the game. But congratulations to the Czech Republic. On they go. Plenty more to come as we hear from Hugo Lloris ahead of France-Switzerland, and Danny Olmo helps us preview Croatia versus Spain.
You're listening to the Euro Show in association with Qatar Airways.
Hope you're enjoying the show with me, Rob Daly, Chris Parrott and Jackie Oatley with me on this edition. Hashtag Euroshow on social media if you'd like to get in touch. We're asking you for your three best central midfielders. This was really in honour of Kevin De Bruyne performing for Belgium in their win over Portugal. Akash has gone for De Bruyne, Wijnaldum and Jorginho. MK has gone for De Jong, Pedri and Busquets. Pedri comes up
so good
a lot. I think we have to get into him a little bit later in the show. Actually, it's not a bad time to move on to that very subject, because Chris, let's go on to Monday's games. What are they and where are they being played?
Well, Pedri is almost certainly going to be in action for Spain against Croatia in the early game at 6 p.m. CEST in Copenhagen, that match between Croatia and Spain, and then the late game on Monday, France against Switzerland in Bucharest. And of course, those four teams hoping to join the four who are already through, that is Italy, Denmark, the Czech Republic and of course Belgium, because Rob, already we're halfway through the last 16.
I know, it's absolutely zipping by. Okay, let's get on to Croatia-Spain. Both sides have been quietly building their momentum.
Laporte, two, and Spain are rising to the challenge.
Kovacic for Modric. It is a stunning, stunning moment from Croatia's one true superstar.
Clipping it out here for Jordi Alba. Sarabia! Three goals for the three-time champions.
And again from Modric. And what about that for a touch from Ivan Perisic?
They might still get another here. Pau Torres off the defender. Five for Spain.
It was a brilliant way to end the group stage for Spain, and lots have been made of the fact that Luka Modric plays his football in Spain and will be taking on Spain. But Dani Olmo used to play his football in Croatia with Dinamo Zagreb. He's now part of the Spanish national team and says fans are in for a treat.
I think it will be a really, really good game for the spectator thing. We are two national teams who like to compete, and we always give our best in the pitch. And of course, we are two of the best national teams now in the Europe, I think. So I think it will be good for them to watch, and I'm sure that we both will go for the win.
It's going to be an interesting team selection from Luis Enrique, who has mixed things up, although he's stuck with Alvaro Morata and is expected to continue to do so. It really felt like, Jackie, that they needed not only to win that last group game, but they needed to rediscover their goal-scoring touch.
They had to make a statement, didn't they? They had to blow away a few goal-scoring cobwebs, because a couple of draws at the group stages, which people weren't necessarily expecting, and having been stifled in that first game against Sweden as well. But what a way to finish off the group stage with that 5-0 win against Slovakia, and to really do it with a flourish and to bring on a few substitutes. First time that we saw Adama Traore, for example, he'd finally let off the leash. But it'd be interesting to see if they get any penalties, bearing in mind they failed to score their last five, for goodness sake.
Well, maybe they could give one to Pedri, because he's a great technician. And it's funny, Chris, you're a huge fan of him, obviously, the Barcelona midfielder. Marca, the Spanish paper, had Modric and Pedri on their front page, 17 years between them.
Imagine those two playing together, same team.
And Pedri is one of only four of Spain's teams to Spain's players to have played in every single minute of this tournament so far. So what makes him so good, and why do you think he's nailed on to start again?
Well, first of all, he only turned 18 in November, and he plays like a guy who is, I don't know, 28, 30, the way that he can control games. Interesting to hear from Luis Enrique, who called him unique. In his press conference ahead of this match, he said he's totally different to what else there is. He's not talking just about Spain there. I think he's talking about in European football. The comparisons, because he plays at Barcelona, are going to be with, if you play in that position, either Xavi or Andres Iniesta. And he is more like Iniesta, right? He is the guy that can break the lines, can pick a devastating pass, can travel with the ball. He's so elegant to watch. And he may well be one of the... I can't really call him a breakout star because he's a first-teamer at Barcelona coming into the tournament. But certainly at international level, given he only made his international bow in March, this could be a seriously rapid ascent if he can fire Spain or help fire Spain back into the quarterfinals of the competition.
OK, let's see if he starts. But Chris, why don't we get the Croatia perspective next?
Yeah, they have been hugely impressive, of course, in their final group game. This game takes place in Copenhagen in Denmark, and we can head there now, Rob, where we have our Croatia reporter, Elvir Islamovic. Elvir, hello.
Hello.
So, no Ivan Perisic. We know he's out after a positive COVID-19 test. How big a blow is that, Elvir, and who do you think might replace him for this enormous game?
Well, to be honest, it's a big blow. To play without Ivan Perisic, who is our key player for years now. He's almost like Luka Modric, so important for Croatia. There is a bad news and the good news there. Bad news is obviously that we are playing without Ivan Perisic, but the good news is that every time we played without him in the team, we won. So
really.
Yeah, that's the good news. I mean, it's a stats, so it's not on me. I mean, I'm just telling you the stats. But there is a catch. Ivan Perisic is a great guy and he's a big professional. In the last 10 years, he missed only 5 matches for Croatia, official competitive matches. He only missed 5 matches.
Wow.
So, and Croatia won all of them 5 matches. So we don't need him, actually. I don't know why he's in the team. So we don't need Perisic, and obviously we are ready for the 6th win without him.
Yeah, I love the optimism. I've seen that you were at Parken Stadium earlier watching the group train close up. How did they look? How did they feel? This is, such a big game for Croatia, back in the knockout stages of Euro yet again.
Yeah, I was watching the training session. I was actually first talking to the coach and to the midfielder Marcelo Brozovic before the press conference, before the training session, and I was with my colleague here, a local guy from Denmark, Pelle Rasmussen, and he was really surprised how relaxed players and the coach are, and we had a little chat after our interviews, after the flash, and we were making jokes, and then the other players arrived, and it was really, really interesting. And I have to admit, I'm also a bit surprised how relaxed they are, really ahead of such a big match, playing against one of the strongest teams in the world, and without Ivan Perisic. But Croatia showed that they can play against the big teams. There are a few media articles in Croatian newspapers today where they are reminding the public that Croatia, in their history, they already beat Spain, they already beat England, Italy, Germany. So, Croatia like to play big matches.
Really looking forward to this one. And just, I wonder as well, although this is the first knockout round, I mean, Croatia sort of had a knockout stage match against Scotland, right, in their third group game. Do you think the fact that they've had the pressure of basically a must win might suit them well ahead of this Spain match?
Well, that's the reason I believe they're actually more relaxed ahead of this match, because their main goal was to reach the knockout stage. And, they didn't play well in the first two matches in the group stage, and then it was a must win against Scotland. And now they're relieved. They're really feeling much better than before that match. And definitely it will be a kind of boost. But if you are looking at stats, Croatia don't have really good experiences from their first matches in the knockout stage. They progressed through the group stage 3 times in their history, 1996, 2008 and 2016, and they lost all 3 matches. So, obviously they don't have a stats on their side in this case.
Top stuff, Elvir. Finally, I have to ask you for a score prediction. I know this is not easy ahead of this game against Spain, but what do you think the final score will be in Copenhagen?
Well, I'll stick with the result from the same match from Euro 2016, 2-1 for Croatia.
Love it. Love the optimism. If that is the case, Croatia will be through to the quarterfinals, and we'll get you back on the show again, Elvir. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Hope to speak to you soon after this match.
Great stuff as always from Elvir Islamovic, our Croatia correspondent. Meanwhile, France take on Switzerland in the Euro 2020 round of 16 in Bucharest. Neither side has really hit their stride just yet, but they both ease their way through the group stage.
Seferovic, the Swiss number 9, has been quiet in the tournament so far, but he's sprung into life tonight in Baku.
And here comes Hernandez in towards Mbappe, and it ends up in the back of Germany's net.
Sheran Shaqiri curls in, an absolute beauty.
It's Benzema who makes it 1-1.
Seferovic on the move, so to Shaqiri. Sheran Shaqiri at the double for Switzerland.
He's come right the way through the middle, and he's done it again. Karim Benzema.
Well, let's see if Karim Benzema can do the business for Les Bleus again. The French captain and goalkeeper Hugo Lloris said we should expect the unexpected in the knockout stage.
When you arrive at that stage of the competition, anything is possible. You always have to respect the opponent, you have to respect the competition, the football. So we are looking forward to start this new competition, I want to say, because we know that the loser will go back at home, and it's something that we don't want to know. We want to go as far as we can, and we must be ready to make a big battle and to win it.
Well, the man speaking to the likes of Hugo Lloris and the rest of the French squad is UEFA's France reporter David Crossan. Hi, David. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good, mate. So there's lots of tactic stuff and team selection stuff ahead of this one for Les Bleus. How are they shaping up, and what do you think they're going to play?
Yeah, I asked Didier Deschamps whether he was going to play three centre-halves and whether Lucas Hernandez was fit. He was happy to answer about Hernandez. He is fit. He's available for selection. But when I spoke to him about tactics, he sort of gave me this quizzical look and said, even you are asking me about tactics now. So I don't know what that says about me or about him. But the general consensus among the French media is that he is likely to go with three centre-halves, and Hernandez could be one of them, or we could see Clement Longley come in to join Presnel Kimpembe and Raphael Varane at the back. It's a system he experimented with against Sweden and Croatia in the Nations League last September, with mixed results, to be honest. They didn't look that comfortable in the system, but he's still trying to find the right formula to get the best out of this team.
But why, David? I mean, I understand, obviously, the issue on my reading was that if Hernandez is not fit, then it's a compromise in the system to accommodate that. So if he is fit, why play three at the back?
I think he's still trying to find the right balance to his team. And he liked the way that Rabiot played when Rabiot came on after the back-to-back injuries to Hernandez and Digne, and Rabiot slotted in at left-back in a back four.
Yeah.
So we're expecting Pavard to come back in. Jules Koundé would have dropped out anyway, but he's also unfit. So it could be Koundé and Rabiot as wing-backs. We know that Hernandez has played centre-half a lot in his career. It's another position that he can play. You've then got N'Golo Kanté in front of that back three, Pogba playing those great passes as he did against Portugal, and then still trying to get the best out of Griezmann, Mbappé and Benzema, all of whom will start.
Yeah, I mean, just when you go through that 11, even with those dilemmas he's got, Didier Deschamps, the talent he has is quite extraordinary. France and Switzerland have played a lot recently, right? So both teams will know each other very well.
Yeah, and France have a lot of respect for Switzerland, that Didier Deschamps likes what Petkovic has done. He says they're not ranked 13th in the world for nothing, and that he rates their attacking trio of Seferovic, Mbolo and Shaqiri. But France, let's be honest, they're not scared of Switzerland. They know that they're favourites, even if Deschamps says what everyone says outside their bubble is just noise and he's just focusing on what goes on within his squad. They know that they've got the talent, the experience, everything you need in order to beat Switzerland and set up the quarterfinal date.
And what's the atmosphere like in Bucharest? We've seen some brilliant support for France in the stands. Are we expecting more of the same in Romania?
Yeah, I think the best estimate for the number of French supporters that I've seen so far is about 1,500, which would be about a fifth of the number that were there against Portugal in Budapest. We know the capacity is much lower in Bucharest. The stadium's great, and I think it's going to be a fantastic occasion. And fortunately, and I've been talking about the heat wave to you, I think, every time I've spoken to you, it is a bit cooler because Deschamps says the players suffered in Budapest, not only because of the temperatures during the game, but also because the temperature didn't drop at night. So I don't think they had the best recovery. Mm. And that's why they cancelled the training session that was planned when they arrived in Bucharest on Thursday and just did stretching and went to the pool. They definitely look fresher now. And they've had a five-day break instead of the four-day break. Admittedly, Switzerland have had an eight-day break. But France, they look more relaxed. They look fresher now. And I'm expecting them to be sharp from the off.
That's an interesting detail there, David. Also, on today's show, we're talking about central midfielders. We're talking about the best central midfielders at Euro. And France definitely have two of the best, don't they? And Conte and Paul Pogba.
Yeah.
I mean, Paul.
That's
Pogba,
pretty good lightly, isn't it?
I mean, I actually wondered, David, because they're such a good pairing for the national team. Pogba's been ridiculous, isn't he, Chris, this tournament so far?
So good.
So where do they rank in like France's all-time central midfielders? Because for me, they're turning into one of the best international pairings that I can think of. Certainly,
yeah,
this century.
They're right up there, aren't they? When we had the Carré Magique quartet, in 1984, which French fans of a certain generation are very nostalgic about. It's actually the anniversary of them winning the title, I believe, today.
Ah.
And Didier Deschamps spoke about that in his press conference. And then that 98 team as well. I mean, when you have players like Vieira and Petit, like Conte and Pogba, they're outstanding. And there were questions about both of them in the press conference today to both Lloris and Deschamps. Deschamps, who pre-tournament said in Conte deserves the Ballon d'Or. It tends to go to attackers, but Conte deserves it.
Oh.
Lloris said it's too early to speak about the Ballon d'Or, but that Conte's the ideal team man. Who wouldn't want to have him on the team?
Well, there's a lot of stars in that team, and he plays with Harry Kane at Spurs, who's still in the competition with England, of course. David, remember, don't ask about the tactics, and thanks for coming on.
Pleasure, as always.
UEFA's France correspondent David Crossan there. They take on the Swiss. Vladimir Petkovic, the head coach, says everyone is talking as if we don't have a chance. We believe in ourselves. Jackie, do you think it suits the Swiss here that they're underdogs for this one?
Absolutely. And I think they'll look at what the Czechs did against the Netherlands and very much take heart from that, because everybody was looking at it and thinking, well, the Netherlands have plenty of goals in them. They have so much talent. And the Czechs, well, you know, they didn't pull up any trees in the group stage.
Yeah.
But of course, this is tournament football, this is knockout football, and it doesn't always work like that. And the Czechs were fantastic in the way they performed. So certainly Switzerland would have looked at that. And they probably will have in the back of the mind, they're probably being reminded by their own media that they have never won a knockout tie at a major tournament in the last 67 years. And they are fighting against the curse, as they put it. So this is the perfect opportunity for them. Of course, it'll be difficult. But as David said there, France haven't fully hit their stride yet. You'd think that there's plenty more to come from them. Mbappe hasn't scored yet. And as we're hearing, they may switch to three at the back. So they're certainly not fluid in the way they're playing. And Switzerland have to take confidence from all of these factors.
Yeah, absolutely. And interesting to hear from Vladimir Petkovic, who, of course, has been in charge for a very long time, Rob, and rightly pointing to some of the results he's had. You know, they've had excellent draws against Germany recently. They drew with Brazil at the FIFA World Cup in 2018. They drew with France at Euro 2016 when he was in charge. So they weren't going to this game overawed at all. And as we saw, particularly in that third group game in Baku, Jadon Sakiri was magnificent.
Yeah.
And if, you know, I know he's up against N'Golo Kanté probably, who's going to follow him around. I imagine he'll be in his, you know, right, you know, in his pocket all game long. But Shaqiri only needs one moment, and if he gets that, and if Switzerland can get in front, they've got every chance of going through.
No injuries for the Swiss. Nico Valverde had a cut foot, missed some training in recent days, but the defender of Borussia Mönchengladbach is okay to take on France, a key player for them. Well, let's hear from the Swiss and Arsenal midfielder Granit Xhaka. He cannot wait for kickoff and says he's coming up against some familiar faces.
It's nothing new for me. I know them from the Premier League, so I know the qualities they have. Of course, Pogba is a guy, he can decide the game for himself, the qualities he have, and Kante, a guy, he's so good without the ball, but with the ball as well. He wins a lot of ball. But we don't need to focus only for these two. They have different qualities in the team. And yeah, it's good. Nobody's speaking about us. The pressure is more in a French team. But yeah, let's see what happens tomorrow. I don't think so. You need a lot of motivation because you know against who you are playing. The World Cup winner, they have amazing qualities in the team. The players we know already. But it's an amazing game for us, for all Switzerland, for the country, for the players, for the staff.
Granit Xhaka speaking there. He mentioned a couple of very good central midfielders that we've sort of discussed already. And this has been our social media topic. Hashtag Euroshow on Twitter, Instagram to get in touch with us with the three best central midfielders you think are at the tournament. Now, we have some national team bias in some of these replies. Rose has gone for an all-German trio of Kimmich, Müller and Toni Kroos. Jane has gone for an all-Italian trio of Locatelli, Jorginho and Pessina, who scored, of course, the other day for the Azzurri. OK, Jackie, who are the three best central midfielders you think of this tournament?
Oh, it's been really boring because they've all been mentioned.
It's all
but
right.
I guess they
it's
would right. be. But I mean, I'm fascinated by Paul Pogba, fascinated by him, because we watch him play for Manchester United on a regular basis and look at him and think, there is more to come from him. We're not seeing him in his full flow in the way that we saw him at the last World Cup, for example. And then, of course, he goes to France. And then I think his passing's been just fantastic. And it is wonderful to see him being so positive. And he obviously gets that confidence from the players around him, maybe from his coach, maybe from the nation and the fans behind him. I don't know. But seeing him and De Bruyne, quite obviously, and we just really, really hope that he's going to be back for the next round. And I do love the German midfield, dare I say it. And I'm a big fan of Joshua Kimmich. Huge fan of his.
Yeah, he's brilliant, Rob. I've gone for three, and two of them are probably skewed because two of them were in action. And we've just watched them play. And sometimes that, you know, that rather says where you're going. Pogba, I think he has been the midfielder at Euro 2020 so far. I'm going to stick Renato Sanchez in there. I thought he was fantastic.
He was.
And actually Tomáš Souček as well. He, in every game the Czech Republic have played, and they've got at least one more now, he has arguably been one of these stars on the pitch. So I'm going to stick him in the conversation.
Yeah, really good shout. A word about him and on Sofal as well. I was talking to somebody at West Ham at the start of this tournament who was saying that those two players from the Czech Republic come into West Ham training on their day off and they practice and they practice. They want to be better. They are so utterly dedicated to their cause. And it's that attitude that has clearly helped them get as far as they have and help pull off a huge shock against the Netherlands.
And they developed a great team spirit, haven't they, in that squad. Souček at the centre of it with the captain's armour. Notable, an honourable mention for Gini Wijnaldum, now out of the tournament. But he was along with Pogba, I think, probably the best performing central midfielder at the tournament so far. Mm. Thanks for all your messages in. Let's quickly return the story to Sunday's action, which saw Belgium knock out the holders Portugal to make it into the last eight. Thorgan Hazard scored the only goal and was the start of the match.
It's a great feeling. I think it was not an easy game tonight. First half was 50-50. After second half, they played very good. They had the ball and we defend together until the last second. And yeah, it's a great feeling with this trophy. He showed today again he's the best, I think, goalkeeper in the world. He saved us one time, two times, and we need a great Thibaut to go forward.
Yeah, Thibaut Courtois central to a clean sheet for the Belgians as they knocked out Portugal. A great result for them. We still have four more round of 16 ties to come. Chris, do you want to run through what's coming up on Monday and Tuesday?
So two matches per day. Monday, Croatia against Spain in Copenhagen. And then the late kickoff is France, Switzerland in Bucharest, Rob. And then Tuesday, England against Germany at Wembley. A bit of team news here. Antonio Rudiger was missing in training today for Germany due to a light cold. England fully fit squad, but Gareth Southgate has said he's not sure whether England duo Mason Mount and Ben Chilwell, who are isolating, of course, will be ready for that huge match at Wembley. And then the last tie in the last 16 is Sweden-Ukraine in Glasgow. Some good news for Ukraine. Winger Oleksandr Zubkov, who was taken off in their opener against the Netherlands, has returned to team training, might be fit enough for that game.
OK, let's wait and see. Chris, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jackie, thanks for your company as always.
Thanks so much.
A reminder to listen to the Euro Show live every match night at 11 p.m. CEST on the official app or on Euro2020.com. If there's extra time and penalties, we'll be on air just after the final whistle. And don't forget, if you can't listen live, you can simply subscribe to the official Euro 2020 podcast wherever you get your shows, on Apple or Spotify as well. But for now, from me and the rest of the team, it's goodbye. Euro 2020 rolls on.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.